are capping off this track about marketing and data. So today, I am specifically talking about attribution challenges as an entire discipline. And I'm going to show you some tactics, a little case study, and then some tools and how you can use them. So first of all, though, real quick, here we go. This is essentially what we cover. I do the same agenda regardless of where I go, just because attacking any kind of subject requires the same things. So you all level set together, then we go who, what, and why, and then we'll use some use cases and then cap it off. But I put this meme on here last minute because thank you for coming to the nerd session in a social media conference. You did not have to. So thank you for that. A little bit about me. Yes, I work at IBM Watson. I specifically am a product marketer for a Watson marketing product suite. What does that mean? I'm in charge of the positioning, the strategy, the messaging, and go-to-market for these products. You'll learn a lot about the products overall, but I just want to let you know I'm not here to sell you a product. I'm here to just let show you what's possible and help you make an informed decision. Before that, I was the digital marketing director at Kickstarter, ran a team of five, sending 14 million emails a week, all over paid media, yada, 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 the normal digital marketing suite. I do have some case studies there, and then I also teach web analytics at New York University and social media marketing. Both of those are separate semester courses. Essentially, this is just the, like, please, please, please trust me slide. And that's my daughter, she's a dog, and that's my niece, so it's just a little bit more about, like, where the rest of my attention actually falls. Yeah, I tuck her in every night. So I'm a dum-dum and thought I had 45 minutes instead of 40, so we will get to Q&A, but I might, in the spirit of a social media conference, answer it on Twitter. So if you tweet at me and then use the hashtag, I will poll all the questions at the end of the session if we have time for Q&A and then answer the most common ones. I think this helps with two things. One, we don't lose time while you're running a mic around. And two, I can see what the most common questions are and answer those first. And then afterwards, I'm addicted to Twitter, so I will answer all of your questions that you have. So it's a new format. If it sucks, I'm so sorry. I'm trying it for the first time. But I figured this might be a good crowd to use it with. All right, so to reiterate, I'm giving you some demos, but I'm definitely not here to sell you a product. I really hate when people go on stage and try to upsell me onto something. So I'm here to show you what technologies exist. Attribution is a hairball. You really do need some sort of tech and additional skill sets to do it well. So I'm just gonna show you what's possible because I do work at IBM Watson. It's an AI, and I'm gonna show you some AI cool stuff. So my opening question is, raise your hand if you know which of your paid channels, like paid social media channels, actually drives your business goals. It's okay to do a half hand, that's totally fine. That's what's normal. Like, you know where to find the data, that's the assumption. People in this room know where to find the data, but you don't necessarily know how to make sense of it. And to me, it goes into the difference between these three terms. You have reporting, insights, and analysis. Any tool under the sun can do reporting. That's probably what you've been able to find. You can use Google Analytics, you can use native Facebook, native Twitter, and it gives you data. However, finding those insights is a little tricky. In some places, they'll give you snapshots of the insights, but that does not mean it leads to the proper analysis. And that's where attribution really comes in, because we have this general problem as marketers. We make a lot of assumptions, and it's fine, that's what testing is for. We make a lot of assumptions, and we don't necessarily know what the best assumptions are. And attribution actually helps us demystify that as a whole. And I'm always reminded of the South Park episode about underpants gnomes. If you haven't seen it, you really don't need to. It's a really crass show, but this, to me, tells a real story of social media marketers and providing attribution. The boys in this town, fictional town, of course, are cartoon characters. They notice that all the underpants are being stolen. They're disappearing. So they, in their normal detective selves, they find that in this underground cavern, things called underpants gnomes are stealing all the underpants. So without attribution, it reminds me of this business model that the gnomes present to the actual boys. And this is a screenshot from the actual show, and it says, phase one, collect underpants, phase three, profit, and they continuously go back and forth, and they never explain what phase two is. And although it's comedy in the show, in our real lives, this is highly frustrating if we don't necessarily know if we are collecting underpants. how do we actually turn that into the greatest profit? And it oftentimes feels like finding a needle in a haystack, but essentially that's it. I think that's what we need to come to terms with. When doing social media analytics and reporting and associating those with driving the biggest business goals, we are trying to find the needle in the haystack, meaning individual data points as insights after analysis, not just reporting. So this is my general intro. How do we do this? If you separate it into these five steps, then you'll be fine. You have setting clear objectives and key performance indicators. This is kind of a duh moment, but seriously, so many businesses that I talk to, I consult with, do this poorly. Don't worry, you'll also get the slides at the end, but feel free to take pictures. I mean, love it. So the second is understanding your audience, because the way that you segment will dictate what the insights are. If someone is married with three kids, you'll derive different insights from the same actions. If someone is single, renting an apartment, and just has a dog daughter. We have different influences in their lives that drive our behaviors and therefore should be messaged to on different channels with different messages. The third is that you can segment by that user behavior, so what they're actually interacting with, including the content, so which images, which videos, which copy, what they're purchasing, and we'll go further into that. Then we have the dilemma of how do you get all this data directly into one report? And we'll talk about data aggregation. And then finally, we'll look at multiple attribution models. We'll actually start with that and then go back to it. So an overview of attribution. I've used this term probably 12 times now. This would be a super fun drinking game, but I haven't really explained it. So this is the crux of the issue, because by the time you actually get a report, the attribution model is already set. So here's my trick question for you. Yes, it is a trick question, very unfair, but it's supposed to be thought-provoking. Of all of these channels, so one single user clicks in 5 times to your website before actually purchasing for $100. In your analysis, when drawing insights, which of these channels should get the most credit for that $100 conversion? Just take a second to think about it. It's a trick question, so I will not just cold call on you. But the answer is, it depends on the attribution model that you use. There are things called single-touch attribution and multi-touch. So if we look at this, we have Facebook, then Twitter, then LinkedIn, then Pinterest, then Instagram. It boils down like this. So if we were to use something that's called last-click interaction, which is the top left for you, it gives 100% of the credit, so $100, to the last click before the actual conversion. So if you've ever used Google Analytics, or you've used, I guess like Google Analytics is the main one, any web analytics platform, by default, will give you a report with last touch attribution. Highly problematic, because there were 4 other channels in here, so your report is inherently flawed because it misses 4 of these. And that's the primary issue with single touch attribution. The second major type of single touch attribution is the one right in top middle. It's called first interaction. And this gives 100% of the credit to the first channel that has a click-through metric associated with it. So why does anyone ever use single touch attribution? The reason is because, one, it's simple, super duper simple, and it really boils down all of your marketing. And if you really do value single touch attribution, then you might have this argument. Last click interaction. We value this because the conversion would have never happened if the person did not click in from Instagram, and therefore it deserves 100% of the credit. Whereas, conversely, first touch attribution says, if the person had not initially clicked in from this channel, the conversion would have never happened. So they're both great. However, they do miss part of the story. So what I do when I'm analyzing my data and my campaigns, I will use both of them. And I'll show you how to do them side by side in a free tool, Google Analytics, and then show you how our artificial intelligence does it for not free. But you need to compare these side by side to get the full story. So if that's just single touch attribution, it's like that book, The Giver. I was forced to read it in like 4th grade. I mean, it's not a bad book, but it's a utopian society where everyone only sees in black and white and there's no color. Single touch attribution to me is like seeing in black and white. Multi-touch attribution is like in The Giver, that one poor kid who sees everything in color, and he sees linear, time decay, and position-based. So multi-touch attribution, these things are actually fairly well named. It just means that multiple touch points throughout the entire journey get some sort of credit. So linear attribution then gives equal credit to each of the individual touch points. So if there are 5 touch points, they each get $20. Why does that even matter for us anyway? It doesn't necessarily actually matter for individual user journeys, but it's highly useful when you're looking across economies of scale. So when I was at Kickstarter, for example, we would have hundreds of thousands of transactions every single month. And what I needed to do was figure out, of those hundreds of thousands of transactions, where should we invest more and where should we invest less? To do that, I took, let's say for round numbers, 100,000 individual transactions that all had different quantities of touch points and different mixes of channels, your normal user journey and your normal analysis. By giving each individual journey, following me, sorry, I'll recap, each individual journey an equal amount of credit for all of those touch points, when you roll it all up and do weighted averages, you really do have a true sense of the influence of every individual channel. So what I recommend with just 3 of literally an infinite amount of attribution model types, start with a side-by-side comparison of last touch and first touch, then move on to linear, and then the advanced stuff, which is this bottom row. I'm just going to explain one, and then we'll move on. But position-based is kind of a combination of all 3. It gives 40% to the first touch and the last touch, and then splits the rest of it in between, because we still do value how they initially got to the site and the last touch before they actually converted, but we can't ignore everything in between. When I was at MakerBot, this is a long time ago, I was running all social media, organic specifically, and what we found out is that no one clicks in from Twitter and then buys a $7,000 3D printer. I was like, duh, okay. But when I was trying to request additional resources, like a camera to make content, freelancers to write copy so we can increase the quantity of posts, I always got a no because all of our reports said Twitter does not work. However, when I used linear attribution instead, what I found out is that the average total amount of touch points before a purchase was about 12. It makes sense for B2B or a very luxury product. 7 of those 12 on average were social media, organic social media, but they were never first touch or last touch. Not never, but like they were very, very rarely first touch or last touch, which I found really interesting because even though people won't hear about us on Twitter, nor will they convert from Twitter, there's this learning curve in between. Without learning about us and consistently being engaged, they would have never, ever actually converted. So we need to explore that, and that's what the rest of this session is about. So this is the product that I work on. It's called Watson Marketing. It's part of the Watson Customer Engagement Suite. And I show it for 2 things. One, it's cool, but also it's the general home screen of any reporting tool, of any marketing tool. It's arguably way too much data. Why do you need this much information? So how do you then take this and boil it down into actual insights? So we need to know where to invest, and then also know where not to invest and at which parts of the journey. So let's start with point number 1, setting clear objectives. At Kickstarter, Kickstarter's mission is to bring creative projects to life. So great place to start. How will your marketing benefit your overall business objective? And that's what I mean by an objective. It doesn't necessarily need to be measurable because that's what KPIs are for. So if our objective is to bring creative projects to life, how do we hold our marketing accountable to do that? Start here, because you need to work backwards from the actual objectives and the KPIs. So we needed to generate pledges to projects. So the total revenue pledge to products, KPI 1. KPI 2, successfully funded projects, because if the users aren't finding success on Kickstarter, the entire platform falls apart. 3rd one, quantity of individual people who actually give to projects. And the 4th one is the quantity of individual transactions. So now we have 2 very clear things: how we help the business, but then how we should hold ourselves accountable and move our marketing forward in our measurement. Think of this as column B of your report. Column A might be your marketing channels. Column B, these are your KPIs. After that, what you need to do is associate and translate those KPIs into the objectives of each paid platform. So my assumption is that you have all done some sort of paid marketing in your lives, and if not, have tried to or looked at it in some way, shape, or form. And if you have, you've seen this, because when you hit click new paid campaign in Pinterest, Twitter, Facebook, Google Ads, whatever it is, the first screen is choose your objective. And already, if you have not set your KPIs, your entire campaign falls apart, and therefore you can't have proper reporting, insights, or analytics afterwards. So that's why we're really setting this, this framework. Oh my gosh, words. So for us, if our goal is to actually convert people, we need to look at conversions, so top right. Totally. Arguments for the other ones, but for sake of time, we're just going to choose conversions. After that, you have a tool that measures things. So make sure that those KPIs are able to be measured within the platform. This is a screenshot of Google Analytics. There are things called goals and events within it. And what we've done here in the screenshot is we've taken our KPIs and made them measurable goals within Google Analytics. Fun, horrible fact about Google Analytics, mixed panel, and platforms like this is that they do not report historical information. So what that means, if you decide that you want to start measuring purchases and you put that into Google Analytics today, it will only start reporting purchases from that point forward. You don't get anything previously. So before you even launch your campaign, company objective, KPIs, understand which objectives you choose in your paid campaigns, and then set those KPIs as measurable goals within your analytics platform. Again, very simple, but a multi-step approach before you even start spending money. All right, section 1 of 5. Next section is your audience. So, fun fact about your customers and just how people interact day to day is that our customers are more complicated than ever. One really sticking point that I've learned since I joined IBM Watson and looking at general consumer behavior is that we do NPS surveying, so Net Promoter Score. What that means is that as a customer, you receive a survey, it's one question, and it asks you, from a scale from 1 to 10, how likely are you to refer a family or friend to this service? And depending on how that user interacts, the business gets a report from negative 100 to 100. And in that sense, I've actually seen that net promoter scores have slowly been decreasing over time, even though arguably services have been getting better. And the issue is that when you decide how great is a service from 1 to 10, 10 is not dictated by that service's competitors. It's dictated by your best experience ever. And in my surveying, my research, I found out a lot of people talk about Uber and Lyft. They're like, if this service is as good as Uber and Lyft, then I will give it a 10. And I'm like, okay, well, this is like a B2B marketing platform. You get that, right? But that's what customers are doing to us. They are expecting that the way we market to them is as good, if not better, than their best experience in the world. And that, in a lot of the research I've done, really is Uber and Lyft. They want something as complicated as getting to the airport, and they want it immediately without any friction. So, translating that into what we do, here are some statistics. The assumption is that people need to learn a lot before they actually buy your product. That's the gist of these stats. And in doing so, the average amount of touch points before a purchase is not 5 like I showed you. That was just for easier math. It's 7. So on average, people actually click in from a site to your property 7 times before purchasing. That is an absurd amount of stuff, and it makes it harder to do the math because it's 7. But this also doesn't include out-of-home and what we call view-through metrics. So someone views a post, does not click and go to your property. Does anyone want to guess how many touch points it takes to convert someone on average for an e-commerce company, totally loaded sentence, but I want to be accurate, including views and clicks together? Brave souls. It's 28. Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. So that's e-commerce, and I think it's because people are very often comparison shopping, so they're coming back and back and back. For B2B and the rest of them, it's a lot harder. There's just more variables involved. So what we're looking at is people read a bunch before they buy, they do their research, and they need multiple interactions, which is why things like Ask Me Anythings, press, retargeting, these are all necessary parts of your actual utility belt when doing social media marketing. Great. So we are a quarter through the presentation. This is bad and broken, and this is great. That's the takeaway from this slide. So the Harvard Business Review came out with this customer user journey a while ago. It's arguably out of date even now, but I still love it for planning and teaching purposes. So where attribution and reporting falls apart is when we assume that someone gets aware, then interested, they make a decision, they take an action. When in reality, there's actually these two loops that just continuously happen forever and forever and forever until they hate you. The only reason they leave this is because you treated them poorly. It's like a relationship, any kind of relationship. So if we digest and dissect this outer loop, which is the new version of this funnel, you have people who need to consider and evaluate before they take the initial action. So this is the Met Museum in New York City. Wherever you're from, you have a museum. So picture that. If users need to consider and evaluate, it also means that you have two sets of competitors and two sets of messaging, two sets of marketing that you need to do for the user. So the chief digital officer, Sri, I can never pronounce his last name, but he's amazing. I actually stole this from one of his presentations. He says, in the evaluation stage, the biggest competitors for the Met are the MoMA, the Natural History Museum, and Lincoln Jazz, all those kinds of things. However, for the consideration phase, the biggest competitors are Netflix and Hulu, because arguably people need to get off their butts to actually go to a museum. If they never do that, then your opportunity size shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. And I think that's important for attribution, because if the user never even considers using the product, then exclude them from your report. I think that it's an unnecessary part of your overall denominator. This is essentially what it looks like when you're breaking it up into a marketing strategy. You need people to hear about the Met, then understand the importance of art to choose between Netflix and Hulu versus actual art. Product consideration. So, all right, well now, because of these multiple touch points, the Met keeps coming up in my conversations when I'm planning things to do. It's an out of home. It is in, I saw an AMA with one of my favorite artists. I also am getting ads because I visited the website once and I'm being retargeted. And then finally, evaluation, which is so great, but there's so much that happens before then. And this is where people say, I should spend my time at the Met instead of the other museums. And getting someone there is usually where that first funnel starts. They're like, all right, well, they just need to hear about us, get some interest, and then they make a decision. That doesn't happen. And the reason why I wrote action on the bottom of there isn't because that's where they give you money. It's where perhaps they decide to participate in your AMA. They decide to sign up for your newsletter. There are multiple stages of actions and why people go over and over and over through each loop. So it's a little ambiguous in terms of reporting, but what you need to do is set all the individual actions that lead up to the conversion and how those in your reports reflect the consideration versus the evaluation phase. And these are the channels that generally boil down. Awareness is usually something like press or out of home. The topic considerations like blog, organic social. Product considerations, SEM, paid social. And evaluation, once they are deep in your funnel, perhaps you're explaining this at an event or through email marketing. For the Kickstarter journey, bringing this all back, it's super long. Has anyone here ever made a documentary? Okay, does anyone know how long it takes to make a documentary? This was a really big culture shock when I joined Kickstarter and was trying to get more creators to create projects. So initially, I started targeting filmmakers and documentary makers, asking them to start projects, thinking, all right, well, you know, I'll like ask them to do it, I'll educate them, then they'll create a project. And then I realized that the sales cycle is 2 years. So from the initial point, well, I mean, it's a lot of content to create. That's the main thing here. People, unless they're already through most of the process. So even though there's only 5 steps to convert the user, these 5 steps happen in the evaluation phase. This doesn't even include all the consideration, because someone at this point already has information about their basic campaign, what rewards they're going to give when someone pledges to give money to their documentary, the story in a video describing their documentary, their profile, and then the rest of their bank account information. These are all super heavy asks and make it so hard to report because the user journey is extended so long. Just to make people feel better, does anyone want to guess how long it takes to get someone to convert to a crafts project? Like 7 days, so much better. So depending on who we're marketing to, the expectations are the user converts in 7 days or 2 years. And lesson number one, it's really, really difficult. But there's tools like Google Analytics, again, that show you the general user behavior. So this is what we call the behavior flow within Google Analytics. What we'll do, you can sort by any dimension, such as which marketing channel, which marketing campaign, and it will show you step by step where the users actually click and where the bottlenecks are in your funnel. So this is great for two reasons. One, it identifies in each user journey where crap just falls apart and we should focus some energy to unbottle the bottleneck or declog that bottleneck. It also shows you whether your assumptions about the user journey are validated or invalidated, because each of these touch points are super important. If you're trying to convince someone that art is important, but they never actually read or go to the blog page about the importance of art, your strategy falls apart. So this is why tools like this are incrementally important when making reports and analyzing your performance and data in the mind of attribution. And then this is that, but on drugs. So this is IBM Watson. What IBM Watson does is it automatically analyzes all of your campaigns, and it shows you the most common journeys. And then it will even give you the duration that it took in terms of hours, days, or months to convert, how much it was worth to invest in it, and your ROI. So again, I'm not selling you a product. I'm just showing you what's possible. Google Analytics is great. It's where I started. It's great, and it's where I started. But this requires a lot of manual effort. IBM Watson is an AI, and it parses through this and does it all for you. So in the spectrum of things that you can do, regardless, you should skill up, learn the necessary skills to do it. But if you are at a larger organization, things like this exist, and it will take hours and hours of analysis into literally seconds, which is cool. I'm biased, but I like nerding out about technology, which is why I work at IBM Watson. So that's how I think you should understand your audience. It's not like, hey, like they like wearing pink. It is their individual behaviors and characteristics that flow into the channels that influence them before purchase. So I like segmenting this into essentially, it's a wedding cake, but it's like anything that is a tier. And it goes like slowly refines as it goes up. So the base level is taking your reports and segmenting by demographic and geography. I think two of the most important things when learning about your users, it's where they live, because people who live in rural Texas versus people who live in New York City will behave differently. I'd like to say if you live in a metropolitan area of the United States, you are by default in the top 5% of technology users in the entire world because of the affluence of those cities, all the technology that surrounds you, and the natural conversations you're going to have. I grew up in the Midwest, so I'm not by any means like crapping on small towns. I really do love them. But there is a difference in behavior and why they need to be analyzed separately. Then gender, age, and that kind of stuff is becoming more fluid over time. I guess both of those really are. And that's why I think that it's, even though it's important, it's only one piece of the cake. The next step is the behavioral and the psychographic information. So I'm about to show you, this is Facebook Insights. It is not unique by most means, given that Twitter does something very similar. You just saw like one slice of IBM Watson. But the second part gives you what they like, what they purchase, and these are all behavioral and psychographic characteristics that help determine whether or not your campaign was successful. So if we zoom out a whole bunch for a second, why is this important? If you decide to take all of your campaigns and measure which channel actually performed best, it could be highly skewed by one demographic. What you need to do is pull these things apart. Kickstarter is a primary example. Before I had started, Kickstarter was essentially doing that. But what we needed to figure out was who is affluent enough to give a larger average order value to a project and who is not affluent enough to not. And those people should be messaged differently. If someone is barely paying their monthly Netflix subscription, I'm not going to go and target them with an ad for a $50 donation. Instead, I might ask them to contribute with their email address or a share to their friends and family about art. Because fundamentally, all these people still care about art, but they need to be engaged differently. And once we started doing that and targeting by this kind of information, all of our conversion rates and engagement rates started to increase because we took that single attribution model and we broke it up. Then the last one is placement and devices. One of the additional problems with measurement and attribution is what we call cross-device and cross-placement. So the question for you is, do you know how you are tracked? I'm going to isolate this to the US because EU and stuff like that is just bonkers right now, and the US still does not care about our privacy. So one of the things that we do in terms of measurement as marketers is that we are able to associate the same person with the same actions by the cookie. So a cookie is a unique identification pixel that's dropped onto the user's browser when they land on a property. Yeah, so if someone goes to your site and they're using Chrome, they get a little pixel that says, this is John Chang. And then when they come back, they leave, they come back, and leave, they come back, you know it's the same person. That's what we call returning visitor. However, if I use Chrome on my MacBook and I use Chrome on my phone to visit Kickstarter.com, I'm treated as two separate users. It is a horrible situation because technically they're two separate browsers. This is an issue. That's actually what Google Analytics reports to you, which is why your percentage of new sessions or new users is always inflated. It is impossible to make it accurate given current privacy laws around the world. Instead, what we try to do is use something called device ID and store and associate that information together. So each of your phones does have a unique identification code, which is great and creepy, depending on if you're a marketer or a consumer. And as you visit websites back and forth, it'll start associating the device ID with the pixels so that we can start saying, all right, iPhone user 4 is the same as desktop user 2. And now, instead of being two different users, we know that they're the same. And again, that's not what Google Analytics is able to do, but that's what tools like IBM Watson is able to do. Question you need to ask yourself is, do I need that level of detail? And most businesses actually don't. If you're a small to medium-sized business, you don't need this information yet, but once you grow and scale, like Kickstarter, for example, that information changes models by 2% here and there, which actually moves the needle. Whereas if you have 100,000 people on an email list, 2% here and there, it's very minimal, not enough to pay for like a $5,000 a month tool. So this is what we actually pulled from that Facebook Insights tool. We were then able to see how many are in a relationship, married, their household income, and then what devices they used. So all this information is free on your social media platforms, and if you want more of it to start associating device ID and cookies, then pair that with a Google Analytics, an IBM Watson, or whatever it is. But this information is accessible and fairly ubiquitous. So the only challenge that you have is making sure that your KPIs are set in all the different platforms. So that is 3 of 5. We're nerding out. So this is where things really fall apart. I made IBM Watson bigger, but that's just because I work there again. The goal is that you have all of this information in disparate sources. So I talked about cross-device issues. We have cross-platform issues as well. So the question I usually ask myself is how likely is Facebook to give all of their data to Google? And how likely is Google to give all of their data to Facebook? They're suing each other all the time over data. For that reason, the performance data that you absolutely need to have 100% attribution lives in different places, which means you need to take it and put it into one source. Hilariously, if you're familiar with Sina Weibo and products in China, they don't have this issue because it's just one product that everyone uses. If we had that, great, but we don't. So what does the world actually look like if you want proper attribution? This is our data problem. So this is a screenshot of a product by IBM Watson called the Universal Behavior Exchange. It uses the same basic framework as any other aggregation tool. So each individual tool and platform, like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and so forth, they have what we call application programming interfaces, or APIs for short. This is something that you all should know and learn, starting now, in the future, but you don't necessarily need to do yourself. You can go onto something like Fiverr, which is a freelancer marketplace. There's tons of API engineers who can do this stuff for $50 to $150 an hour, because it's actually, at this point, becoming pretty basic work. So the marketer, if you want to learn this stuff on your own, go ahead. They're called APIs. If not, find a freelancer who does it. But this is why it's important. APIs are essentially gateways to data sets. So Facebook has an API, and it allows you to push and pull information from Facebook. So does Google, same thing, and so does Twitter, and so forth. So with that, all you have to do is access each individual channel's API and pull the information that you need into one database. The problem with that is, I mean, it does require additional skill sets, but you need a place to put it all, and it's intensely complicated. So essentially, they are different data silos that need to go through an automation platform and then into your central database. So everything that you see in Facebook can be put into an Excel sheet or a tool like this, which is Looker. It's my favorite data aggregation tool. Shouldn't say that because IBM has one, but this one's pretty cool. I use this one at General Assembly and at Stack Overflow and MakerBot and at Kickstarter. And I didn't like adopt them into those companies. It's arguably the easiest data aggregation tool to use once you have someone who can connect the different APIs. And this is an example of a report. So since my KPI was launching new projects, I was able to, I redacted all the actual metrics, sorry. But I took all of the categories where we were holding ourselves accountable, then did the metrics, and was able to report which channels were most influential linear attribution after ingesting the data from the different sources. So if you thought that attribution was something easy to solve, I'm so sorry. This is the world that we live in. It's highly expensive. It requires additional technical skill sets. And finally, in addition to that, it requires revisiting all the basic things, because I know I've worked with really talented data scientists and data analysts, and they can't do their job right if the marketers never set the right KPIs, because this report is nonsense with too many KPIs. So then our final section. Cool. I have like 2 minutes left. I'm so sorry. Starting a project, you know that's important to us. So I'll just cap off with this case study because it has videos and it's fun. We started by getting initial awareness from users by showing them videos. And each of these videos were 42 seconds long, but based on how long they watched the video, I jumped them ahead of that outer loop. So if they watched 3 seconds, they were put into initial consideration. If they watched 30 seconds, they were put into final stage consideration. Making sense now? So this, and you can do this as retargeting audiences in all of your paid platforms. So this is another screenshot of Facebook. We can actually then make new user segments for measurement and for targeting based on these kinds of things. So if you strategically make your creative and the messaging points 3 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever it is, you can then jump people ahead and expedite their use in your actual reports and your marketing. So Julia Nunes is a very accessible artist for Kickstarter. She's a music artist and has run 4 Kickstarter projects. I'll just show you the video.
I am Julia Nunes. I'm a musician and a songwriter, and I make videos on YouTube. I had gotten to the point where I had enough songs that I really liked that I wanted to hear bigger than what I was capable of by myself. And that is when I looked at Kickstarter for the first time. I've done 3 Kickstarters. We've raised over $270,000. I think of it like my record label. You can make it as big or as small as your people want it to be. Any other route, there's like a middleman between you and the people who listen to your music.
And then in the evaluation stage, we made a free Skillshare course about becoming a good Kickstarter creator, and we would retarget them based on how much they actually finished of this course. So if they watched the entire video, they would be indoctrinated into this course, and as they progressed along, I knew where they were in the user cycle and could then attribute different marketing resources to where people would fall off, such as, I think the actual big one was finding your project story. That's where people were like, oh, it sounds easy, but I have no idea how to tell my story, and that's where we injected additional marketing. All right, so here's what I'm gonna do, because I don't wanna take up too much of your time, and we are at time. Tweet at me, I will answer your questions. I'll also be around, so if you want to just talk, I'm happy to do that. I also have on my website free video tutorials of Google Analytics and stuff like that. I used to actually just do internal trainings at Kickstarter because like people were like, how do I use this? So I started making QuickTime screen recordings and then realized this should just be free to people. So if you go to johncheng.co, no H in my name, I have a blog. It's really horrible, I'm so sorry. But it has a bunch of resources. Go to market strategies and additional knowledge here.